Yes, guys, what's good? You tuned into Mango Masala. My name's Gaines. I'm here with Halima.
Hi, everyone.
I think it's just a typical Monday afternoon for both of us.
I'm shattered. Are you?
Yeah. It's not worth it. Like, what's going on?
This is literally... I live in a flat share right now, house share with a group of, like, young women, all between, like, 28, 30 years old, like, all professional young women. And every single day I bump into one of my housemates in the kitchen. This is the exact conversation that we're having. It's like, what the fuck are we doing?
You're just ants wandering around on a rock.
No, we really are. We really are.
Adulting is hard.
It is, isn't it?
You know what? I won't hear anyone say any different.
I was talking to one of my friends once, and she put it so succinctly. She's like, when you're an adult, yeah, it's like, your career is on the line, your relationship is on the line, your things with your family are on the line. Like, there's so many high alert things going on. And then you gotta come home and fucking hoover. I was like, that is it. Like, that is actually, like, that is adulting in essence.
Speaking of serious adult things, did you get your alert yesterday?
Yeah, I did. What the hell was that about? It's not the first time that's happened. I've seen loads of people talking about it, but they've done it before.
Yeah, it was a couple of years ago. I remember because it was actually, I think, just after my stag do. I think I'd come back and my uncle was with a friend who happens to be, like, white. And they got their alert and we didn't. And we just were like, interesting. But this time, everyone got theirs all at the same time where I was anyway, so... They must have improved.
I was at the, you know what's so funny? I was at the Halal Food Festival in London, which is like a huge event. It's at the London Stadium. It was at 3 p.m. or whatever it was that it went off. And it was everyone at the same time. Yeah. And I thought, all these Muslims in one place and all of, very dubious.
And that's the thing as well. It's that anyone who's in any public setting within the UK, it must have been like that. And it's so funny because I think... Kareena Kapoor, I don't know if you've seen the clip. She was
in Birmingham, yeah.
Yeah, she was doing some event, and then obviously she was in the middle of answering a question at this Q&A, and suddenly just all these phone alarms just start going off, and someone had to assure her and be like, yeah, like, it's fine, it's just the thing the government are doing. But yeah, it's mad. And you really would panic, like, if you didn't know what was going on, you would be like, what the fuck is going on?
Also, I wonder, like, what kind of impending danger are we in that they need to implement something like this?
It does feel like preparing for the absolute worst, but then I am kind of like, if it gets to that point, how much is a phone alert actually gonna
do for anyone?
And I think the thing that I find most funny is that my dad was showing me on iOS you can actually go in settings and choose whether or not you want to have them on or off. And also, when you choose whether you want them on and off, there's an option for severe alerts and extreme alerts. And it's like...
What's the difference?
What's the difference? And also, it's like, if something's popping up on my phone, surely it must be very important for it to do that in the first place. Like,
you shouldn't give people the option. Like, if there's actually going to be a flipping, if we're going to get bombed at some point by the Russians, like, everyone needs to know.
But I think as well, if it got to that point at this stage, I'm kind of like, how much is a phone alert gonna actually do?
No, it's not too.
Like, literally, the UK public right now, if something like that happened, just go into frenzy. Like, look at COVID with all the bloody toilet paper. We don't
True. We're not a very keep calm and carry on nation, are we?
For a nation that really, like, literally has that on repeat, keep calm and carry on, we really
don't know how to do that. We don't know how to do that.
If that alert came through and it was serious, I fully anticipate it would be every single man for himself.
No, I definitely agree. We don't have that kind of, like, and I guess it's because thankfully we've never been in any kind of, like, dire situation where we've had to exercise, like, crowd management or crowd control. Like, I can imagine maybe if there's countries in war and they have, like, frequent airstrikes. Oh, I know it's kind of very morbid now, but, you know, I can imagine people living in that kind of situations, they'd have established protocol and people kind of would know what to do. Whereas, yeah. And well, we are very lucky that we don't.
You are right, we are lucky. But I think also the closest thing that we've had to, like, that, I would say, in terms of being prepared for stuff like that, I would say is that maybe, like, going back to World War II, as in the nearest thing, and obviously they had the whole evacuation thing.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because that is something that I saw, on social media, actually, someone pointing out how that was literally people within the UK, within the like cities, getting on trains, going into the more rural areas,
escaping,
stay with other people, escaping, being praised as being so brave for doing it. It was such an emotional thing, and this was all that we were taught like in primary school about all of this. And it was like, obviously, it like was like, oh, like that's really sad, blah blah blah. And it's like, so how is it that the whole of the UK that's been brought up and that's like a compulsory part of the education system, you will know about that, how is it that you can go through that and yet you can't project those feelings onto what's going on, say, with asylum seekers that come to the UK now?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's a conversation we have so often, isn't it? Like the selective empathy and double standards. And literally last week we were talking about the case of like when Ukrainian refugees were coming in and how they were treated, and entire programs of resettlement were created just for that conflict. And then when it's people from other parts of the world, i.e. non-white people, all of a sudden it's like resulted in nationwide protests. It's just very stark, isn't it?
And it's mad because we obviously discussed this last week, and it was even in the days following, immediately between the time that we recorded this and it went out, there was more stuff that happened. For example, Keir Starmer and Yvette Cooper going on about how they proudly like have the Union Jack and St. George's flags up around in their houses. And it's like the gall to go on publicly and say that be your only response when you know,
right, you know what the climate is. Yeah,
you know what the climate is, you know the reason why all these people are erecting flags around the country, and your response is to say, well, I do it in my house. Like,
yeah, like you could very well have just said like, you know, yeah, it should be a symbol of pride, and we don't like that it's been co-opted by this far-right extremism. Like, that is what you should have said. It's not to denigrate your national pride or whatever, but to kind of come up and just say that, knowing what kind of the messaging behind the Union flag at this stage, is very, it's a choice.
It's 100% a choice. And for that to be like the only thing you say. Anyway, the main thing I wanted to speak about today, which is to do with bad vibes, but elsewhere in the world. Have you seen what's going on in Nepal? At least 19 people were killed and over 100 injured in Nepal on Monday after security forces clashed with thousands of young protesters. Police reportedly used tear gas, water cannons and rubber bullets. Demonstrators retaliated with branches and water bottles. At least 10 people in hospital are in critical condition with what seems to be gunshot wounds to the head and chest. So a lot of state-enacted violence upon the people of Nepal, and I think it should go noted as well that the majority of people that I think are taking part in these protests were the younger generation, because it has been labelled the Gen Z protest. The reason why these people are protesting basically comes down to widespread frustration over corruption in the country. One example that I saw was they pay all this tax and they never get told where is this actually going. However, I think there's been a long-standing issue in Nepal of neglect and suppression of youth voices, and this is kind of like the uprising that's come from that. The most recent catalyst for these protests, there was this social media ban that came into place on the 4th of September, so last week. This has blocked multiple platforms, including Facebook, WhatsApp, Instagram, and YouTube, after they failed to register with the Ministry of Communications and Information Technology by the September 3rd deadline. So the reason why they were being required to sign up for this is because Nepal are arguing that all these websites enable fake news, hate speech, and online fraud, and they're saying that's rife in the country, and they're saying that these websites basically need to take further steps in order to reduce this. And in order to not be shut down, what they needed to do was name a local contact, a grievance handler, and a person responsible for self-regulation within the country. Obviously, they did not do that, and as a result, they shut down all of these websites. In 2021, around 7.5% of Nepal's population was living abroad. So, and obviously they would rely on these social media platforms to communicate with family back home. So I think that's been another reason why people are so angry, is because so many of them rely on these social media platforms in order to contact people that don't live there anymore. Yeah, so obviously there was a protest, like, well, we're recording this on Monday, so it was earlier today. However, it has resulted in violent clashes, which obviously it's happened on the day, and given the fact that all of these social media outlets have been, like, clamped down upon, it's quite hard to see exactly what's going on and what how things transpired. That being said, regardless of whether there was violence on both sides or whatever, the state should obviously always be able to de-escalate without violence, and certainly without killing people, which is where we're at. It's interesting as well, because apparently a big inspiration for these protests was the ones that happened in Sri Lanka and Bangladesh in the past couple of years.
I was honestly gonna make that comparison, and I think that it's like an age-old story, isn't it? Like, I mean, everywhere in the world, that literally, like, I think it is just a permanent characteristic of governments that they're going to be corrupt. Like, literally look at what's happened in the UK, you know, with, you know, the cabinet reshuffle and Angela Rayner having to step down, resign or whatever. I think it's like, it's just not come as a surprise. I think that obviously there are situations that are a bit more dire given certain contexts. South Asia has a very interesting history of, like, corruption and dealing with corruption, and for me personally, like, I'm always on the side of, like, people power, and I think it's always the young people who are I think kind of calling it like a Gen Z protest as an attempt to minimize the significance of it and, like, the kind of potential power that it can have. But actually, when you look at, you know, history, it's always, like, young people that are leading the charge and kind of impacting the most change. Like, for example, in Bangladesh, it started with the students, you know, and then look what happened. We literally toppled a dictator. Like, it's monumental. So, yeah, full solidarity to the people in Nepal.
It's interesting as well, because I think it really shows that anyone can be corrupt. Like, because I know that obviously our Labour government as it stands now does not really represent the Labour that maybe would have been 10 years ago or whatever. So it's maybe a bit less surprising that there is so much wrongdoing happening right before our eyes. But even, like, in Nepal, so, for example, the people that are in power now, it's actually the Communist Party. So it's interesting as well that it's, like, obviously a party that supposedly would have align with maybe what we would align more with is still being authoritarian, essentially.
Yeah, yeah. And there's an interesting, like, kind of contention there that kind of is very important about socialism in theory and socialism in practice. Like, people kind of always will say to me, like, well, socialism doesn't actually work because look at this country and look at that country and blah 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 blah. And it's like, do you say that they're socialist in practice, but, like, they're not really? So they say that they're socialist in theory, but they're not really in practice. Like, if you're in a country and you're, like, kind of denigrating one demographic of people kind of systemically, you can't claim to be a socialist party or a communist party by any means.
Yeah. It makes complete sense, actually. And even Labour, for example, I look at this, like, just because someone's got a certain badge on, it doesn't mean necessarily that they represent
that for you. Yeah,
yeah. Unfortunately, in the case of Labour, arguably it has gone beyond a certain point now where I don't really see how it could roll back.
So beyond a point, unless it's like a completely new cabinet, completely new leader, obviously, which is, I mean, I don't see that happening in the foreseeable future, which is why, obviously, people like Zara Sultana and Jeremy Corbyn have created their own party, because there is absolutely a need for it that even the Greens don't cover.
But then that's the point. The point is that the Labour that myself and you aligned...
It's just not that anymore.
The Labour that myself and you aligned with, say, like, 10 years ago when we were first able to vote, or even before...
God, that is 10 years ago, isn't it? Like, 2016 elections, like, this now would have been the...
Even, like, 2015, because that was the general...
God,
election,
that was
yeah.
when the Tories won, isn't it?
It was the first... I know it was the first time that we were able to vote.
Fuck, yeah, I just remembered that.
Not so fun times.
No.
But, yeah, my point is that I think that really goes to show, like, stick to principles rather than party allegiance. Like, people who blindly stand by, like, Labour, for example, in its current state, I'm just like, they get, surely there has to be a breaking point for you, right? Where you're like, is it really worth doing this anymore? Like, does this really represent what I believe in?
Yeah, that's, but that's why, so that's what's so crazy, like, I'm crazy about parliamentary politics. Like, have you, like, you know, when people talk about getting the whip taken off them and things like that, it's because, I think I've spoken about this before on our show, but like, basically when you're an MP, right, what we think an MP is supposed to do is like represent the interests and the consensus of their constituents, but actually the higher priority for them is to represent party consensus and like party priority. And if you go against that, even if it's in the interest of your constituents, you get pressured, and then you can have the whip taken away from you. That it's like parliamentary bullying. Fucking mental. Yeah.
And it's just, that's just commonplace. That's literally,
that's just a thing. Yeah, like there's the chief whip, like that. Yeah. there's like people's role is to put pressure on MPs to keep vote in favor. Isn't that mental? That's not how, that goes against the grain of what a democracy is. And yet it's just in a very well established and accepted thing in British parliamentary politics.
Yeah, it is literally the thing. It's not even like a, oh, it's a, what's it called?
It's like a fringe thing that not many people buy into.
It's like an unspoken rule. It's literally part of, like, I'm sure right. In like textbooks, for example, this is what this is. Like,
yes.
This is actually a thing and it's not questioned.
It's institutional. It is institutional. Like, it's fucking mad. It's like mandated bullying.
Each day there is just a thing after the other that's just like, what is the point of this anymore?
No, seriously, that's why I like fully divested from parliamentary politics.
So yes, solidarity with the people in Nepal.
Yeah, absolutely.
In positive news, have you seen all the clips coming from Breaking Borders?
Oh, the South Asian Festival.
Yes, festival taking place in Malta. It's the first year that it took place this year.
Who played? Who headlined?
So it was a very Punjabi heavy lineup. Karan Aujla was there. Who else? Jazzy B. Load of others. Raspira. Basically, it was, if I'm being honest, it was a bit techie from the start. Basically, this is the first time that this festival has happened, right?
Would you have a gone?
No. I'm not, like, to be honest, any festival, I'm not rushing off my feet to go to, let alone one that requires getting on a plane to go to it as well. But that being said,
I think it's good that they did something like that. Obviously, there's been similar models for a long time.
Yeah, like, this is the thing. So Mirchi Fest has been a thing. So that happens every year. But this Breaking Borders, this is the first year that it's happened, right? And it took place in Malta. And like I said, it's maybe a bit more different to Mirchi Fest in that it's like a proper Punjabi event. Like, really, like, I'd say 90% of the lineup is Punjabi artists.
Okay.
And it just looked a bit too good to be true, to be honest.
Why?
So the lineup obviously was there, and there were all these big names on it. They announced it. First of all, it's not just like a weekend festival; it's like 4 days.
That's a long time.
It's in Malta.
It's a lot of logistics for the planners.
Yeah, and also, like, it's not just like a main stage and like a side stage. There were a load of like boat parties as well. Like, it's literally like, and they obviously advertised all this and everyone's bought tickets, but I really feel like there was still a bit of like, is this actually gonna be a thing?
You know what? That just goes to show the reputation of like DSE planning.
I don't even think that. Like, I mean, look at like Fire Festival, for example. It was kind
true,
of
true. Like, there's always some level of controversy when people have these like big abroad like festivals.
Yeah, no, but it's big abroad festivals. All these massive names, like boat parties, good weather, Malta, like this, and that, and it's just like, surely this is too good to be true. Even like in the month leading up to it, even in the week leading up to it, there were a couple of people that dropped out, like, of the lineup. Oh. Like, do you know Sucker, Teggy Bang?
Yeah.
They were meant to the other lineup and they dropped out last minute.
It's a bit shit.
Yeah, so there was a bit.
Should have got me to replace him.
No comment.
I could have done it.
You could have done it, yes, because you have done it well. That's the.
Oh, shut up, Carlos.
Anyway, so the fact that they dropped out a couple of days before was a bit like, oh, like, is this actually?
It started. This is a downward spiral.
The start of the end. But no, it happened, and from everything I've seen on socials, it seems to have all gone really well.
So. Oh well, that's great. Then I thought you were setting up the story to say. It was like Fyre Festival, where it was like nightmare story after nightmare story after nightmare story. But that's good to know.
Yeah, exactly. Like, from what I've seen, anyway.
Well, maybe we need to get some press passes for next year.
Flown out.
If you're listening, yeah. Like I'm sure you are, for an all expenses paid trip, we're very happy to come and do the press.
And Moochie Fest.
And Moochie Fest.
And whenever they do one in the UK, but to be honest, they never will because the weather here is not reliable. As a thing to finish on, I just wanted to say as well, in regards to Breaking Borders, I feel like that only could have worked, or it works so well, I would say, with a Punjabi lineup. And I think there is something particular, I don't know what it is, but I feel like there is something really special about Punjabi music in just that.
They are like the kind of global exporter of, like, in terms of South Asian music, like, they are kind of. They have the most pull, they have the most influence, they have the most, like, globally I'm talking, you know, in terms of...
Yeah, but I'm like, why do you think that is, though?
I think for a number of reasons. I think that, like, in the noughties, a lot of Bhangra music was using a lot of, like, garage hip-hop kind of influences, and there was a lot of overlap with the genres, which makes it more readily exportable. And I think... From then, like, that's where it just kind of, like, exploded from, and kind of bringing in artists from other genres. That's what I would say. And also, it's just great music.
Yeah.
It's great music. It's music that, and also, like, Bhangra music generally tends to be very, like, upbeat, you know? So it's music that, like, people could dance to and kind of really get behind, you know?
It's just interesting because I remember when Simran, R.I.P. Simran, when Simran used to speak on Punjabis, particularly when there were issues ongoing in the region, which I should say, obviously, thoughts with everyone in that region at the moment with all the floods that are happening. Whenever Simran would speak on it, she would say about how it's such a small region and how they are ultimately have been oppressed multiple times in history, yet. It's just so interesting to see how much of an impact the culture has.
That they have on, like, global culture. Yeah. No, true. And I think a lot of that is, like, I think actually a lot of it is, like, probably started with, like, diaspora. You know, when you think about the kind of Bhangra on, like, a global scale. And I would say, like, when I say diaspora, I would say the UK diaspora. You know, really, when we think back to noughties and even 90s, like, Punjabi music, obviously, there's, like, homegrown Bhangra, but that kind of, that quality of being, like, cool, like, cultural export, I would say that a lot of it came from, like, the UK Punjabi diaspora.
It would be really interesting to see, say, that hadn't happened, would anything have filled that void, or would it just have been a completely different place than we are?
Very interesting.
Well, that seems like a relatively positive way to round things off. Well, I won't see you before, so happy birthday for, what is it, Friday?
Oh, shut up. Just shut up. I don't want to think about that right now. We'll have a debrief. We'll have a birthday debrief when I'm back.
Okay. You heard the Demi Lovato song? There's one of her more recent ones where it's like, finally 29.
Is it?
Yeah.
Why the fuck is someone making a song about turning 29? That's nothing to sing about.
Did you ever watch or know of That 70s Show?
No.
No,
my sister's watched it, though, like, so I'm aware of it. Yeah. The one with Ashton Kutcher and Mila Kunis. Yeah.
The guy in that, I don't know what he's called in it. Basically, there's a guy in that Demi Lovato used to date when she was younger, but the point is, like, she dated him when she was 17. And he was 29.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And the lyrics...
Well, that's predatory, isn't it?
So that's why the lyrics to this song is, finally 29, just like you were at the time. Yeah, and it's like 17, 29, yeah.
And she's like, well, I couldn't imagine being a nonce at this age.
Yeah, that's basically the message behind it. But first bit of the lyrics, finally 29, apply to...
Maybe I'll like use it in my birthday Instagram caption. I'll just crop like the last bit of the song out. I don't want to have any nonce associations.
On that note.
Yeah, on that lovely note. See you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.